Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. Welcome to Bookworm. You know, I just have been spending time with this book. It's called Men and Apparitions. I think it's absolutely delectable. My favorite book previous to this one, Lynn Tillman, my favorite one was American Genius, a Comedy. And in that book, the narrator is in what might be an insane asylum or a literary colony. But however this is, she's trapped. In this book, we're also trapped within the mind of a very unusual man. His name is Zeke. His name is Ezekiel Hooper Stark. He's a cultural anthropologist. He's an ethnographer. He's unquestionably male. And as an ethnographer, he's in some sense studying what it means to be a male. And everything that enters his mind, he intellectualizes. And as a result, it becomes a hilarious book. I thought of his relation to life as being something like Sylvester's relation to Tweety Bird.
Oh, my God.
I just found it daffy and delicious. Did you mean it to be as funny as I found it?
Sometimes, yes. I think that writing it, I thought some of Zeke's ideas were comical, and then sometimes I found them to be smart and to the point and interesting. But there's something about Zeke as he goes on his quote-unquote journey, which is what every narrative is, and it's a surprising one, his journey, I think. He's testing out ideas. He's saying everything in a way. He's an ethnographer of family photographs to begin with.
And this is not something he was sure. He started doing it in school.
Right.
He'd get family albums and analyze them.
That's right.
And
that's right.
Analyze the relations, speculate about the relations among the people, because his own family is so incongruous and so full of both love bordering on incest and distance.
And distance, yeah. It's the family romance in some way, with all the distress and stress that brings to mind. And he has an older brother whom he has almost nothing to do with, can't stand his older brother, whose name, oddly enough, is Hart, H-A-R-T.
Mm-hmm.
And his younger sister, who's quite a bit younger than he, whom he refers to as Little Sister.
Little Sister. And she is a special case. She suffers from selective mutism.
Right.
Which is hilarious because he can't stop talking.
That's right. He can't stop talking. And he sometimes analyzes himself in relationship to her problem, he thinks. Well, she says to him, to the extent that she speaks at all in the book, that, you know, because you talked so much, I couldn't talk.
Well, it's also interesting because his girlfriend, it's not his first girlfriend, but it might as well be, Maggie, teaches him how to love.
Yes.
And he's grateful to her. He recognizes that she's brought something into his life that is different from what he was.
That's right.
And as this difference, Now, this is a very popular critical word, difference. Yes. But it's central to him as an ethnographer. So he'll ask people, how are you different from your father?
Right.
What is the change between the generations? And this is what he's studying. In other words, the things that float through the mind are his profession.
What struck me when I was starting this novel was, how do I tell the story of, we live in a glut of images. How would I tell that story? What would that novel be? And so that's Zeke's preoccupation, in a way, is this glut of images. And he speaks about it in all different ways. But in the middle of his life, or earlier in the middle of his life, and I won't tell what happens, but something happens and he becomes even more invested in what is a man. And he starts thinking about the idea of the new man. And that new man is the man who comes about after the women's movement in the wake of feminism, whose mother is a feminist, whose sister is a feminist. And all around him, he finds himself and younger men changing. And so I decided that Zeke would do an ethnographic study of men. And that's a part of the book, which is called Men in Quotes.
Men in Quotes, yes. And just so we're sure, what's ethnography?
Ethnography is the close study of a group. It's trying to understand its habits, its society, why things are established in the way that they are. It's looking very closely at a small group. It could be motorcycle riders in San Jose.
As I was reading, I found Zeke wanting to be the exception to every rule. And I thought about my grandpa. He was a tailor, but he was one of the very few men in the ILGWU, the International Women's
Garment Union.
Yes. And I thought he was the sweetest man. You know, it was as if being welcomed by all those women, a male tailor, he was delighted. He could take a handkerchief and fold it and turn it into a mouse and make it jump up his arm. But I thought of Zeke in this way. He's an eccentric. He's an oddity. And he's trying to understand what's become of life, that men are different from what they once were. Should be so. You know, my grandmother would say, how have I? And men are different from what they once were, but the women are too.
Yes.
Zeke's mother has been studying Zeke as much as Zeke studies the family. These are a group of people who are staring at one another, thinking about what makes a picture. That is to say, they're framing each other.
Right.
And framing is another subject for ethnography,
right,
and for art, right. And it becomes,
and he speaks about framing a lot
constantly.
He talks about the frame that he's in.
So then the title Men and Apparitions, I interpreted it as being that the apparitions are the ideas that men insist on dragging into the field, that it's not just ghosts, but that the intellect likes to live in a haunted house, that all of these ideas that he thinks up are a way he has of entertaining himself and of entertaining us. He's a zany.
He's zany. He's also serious about things.
Oh, he's heartbreaking. I won't lie.
He is heartbreaking.
He is heartbreaking. But he's heartbreaking because of his distance from others.
You know?
Because he knows that he will never get any closer than he has to the things that he wants. And it's a very, you know, again, he's full of self-realization, but it doesn't help him.
No. Well, that is sometimes a problem for many of us, isn't it? That we can recognize our problems, recognize why we are depressed or why we make the choices that we do sometimes that are quite destructive. And yet, I think the hard thing to deal with is that knowing doesn't necessarily mean you can change. But just going back to apparitions, Michael, it was very much to me that word, I thought, which doesn't get used very much. And I thought, you know, it brings in so many different ideas and concepts, one of which is brings in the images. Men and women, we have images of ourselves. We see images all the time. Why do we want to be one image or another? There's so much pregnancy in an image. There's so much to try to take apart and understand why we're drawn to one thing or another. And Zeke thinks about that. He really is thinking very seriously about that and the image of a family.
When this book begins, responsibly, like someone, brushing off dust from a lapel, he wants us to know that he knows who Max Weber is, that he's quoting Goethe's, and you know that he's familiar with the human sciences,
right?
But he's not really human.
Oh, Michael!
But it's hilarious. Yeah. I mean, because I think we've always wondered, what does sociology really study? Mm-hmm. Is it really a field? You know, people go off to college, and if they don't know what their major is, they say sociology, or they say cultural anthropology.
Well, you know, you study Marx in sociology, you study Weber, you study some of the greatest thinkers that we have in the Western world, and probably other places as well. Edward Said would be studied now, Gayatri Spivak, and so on. Sociology is, you know, the study of society, but ethnography and cultural anthropology, they're studying more the things that are made, because culture is what's made and society is people, so it's different.
I thought that he's the victim of the enormous amount of intellection and cultural invention that we now accept as a given of thought, but that remains, at least to me, dubious. To me, I thought you invented the comic character of our age, someone with ideas, who is the victim of all this ideation.
Well, I think as the novel goes on, you see him in crisis with those ideas. And things are going on in his so-called personal life and in his public life that he begins to recognize are in relationship to each other. So what I wanted to do from the beginning, one of the thoughts I had was that you choose theoretical work that suits your psychological needs.
Yes.
And these, I don't care what theoretical work it is. It is somehow engaging with very early desires and needs that you have. It's speaking to those. And I wanted to deal with the fact that a theory comes from something and affects one in certain ways.
Yes, but a theory is also an apparition.
That's right.
It doesn't exist. You can find what could be purportedly a picture of it. Look at them arranged in this room, not looking at one another. Just look. But you don't know them. And so the things he has to say about the pictures that he studies are completely impositions.
Yes, they are interpretations, which is what theory is. Theory is an explanation. You know, people want to make it more obscure than that, but all theories in some way set out to explain something. And he's trying to explain photographs, particularly family photographs.
And, you know, Susan Sontag, in that book on photography,
yes,
speaks about the enormous number of images and how they've replaced our ability to understand what we're looking at, and that the image replacement system is one which prevents us, in fact, from seeing anything very deeply. And so I took this to be, to my mind, one of the wittiest novels I've read in the last 20 years. I found him working very hard. He's trying to convince us that he's a genius.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very brilliant, but he's caught in his own loop.
Yes, he is. He's definitely caught in his own loop. And I would say that that makes him probably one of the most realistic characters I've ever written.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Lynn Tillman about her new book, Men and Apparitions. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. I'm talking with Lynn Tillman about her latest book, Men and Apparitions. I've read all of her books. In this one, this is the new man born under the sign of feminism navigating the modern world.
Yes.
And
there were even more images than when Susan Sontag was talking about them. Now, with the internet and with cell phones and so on, photographs become so easily made and thrown away. We don't hang on to them. They're just there to have, and people are taking them constantly. And they're piling up and piling up until one day somebody says, oh, I'm going to delete 1,000 or something. So their meaning becomes even more insubstantial.
Insubstantial, while the language used to describe them becomes more, what would you say, ponderous and semi-parodic.
Mm-hmm.
You can't understand by looking at a picture people you don't know.
Well, he does say that. I mean, Zeke knows he's projecting into pictures, but...
But he can't stop.
He can't stop.
He can't stop.
And most of us can't.
He's just grown used to being Zeke. As we all grow used to being Lynn or being Michael, and...
I don't think I'm used to being Lynn yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Because I read this as a book by someone who knew herself very well about a man who doesn't know himself well at all.
That sounds like a great title. A book about a woman who knows herself about a man who doesn't know himself.
But it is. That's what's
so... Well, it's not that I don't know myself in a way, but I think I remain some kind of stranger to myself, too. And it's part of probably my impulse to write fiction, finding myself in different characters in each of the books I've written, some more than others, of course.
But this one seems to me to be the most entertaining and the funniest and the strangest. I agree. Strange is an important word here because he feels alienated from himself.
Yes.
And he wonders to what extent the stranger, that Camus character, is relevant to his case.
Yes.
But it's relevant only because he says so.
Right.
And when he's young, he encounters his first praying mantis, or as he says, PM.
Yes.
The praying mantis is indeed a beautiful and odd insect.
Yes.
But he's fascinated by the praying mantis because to him the praying mantis is as strange to the praying mantis as Zeke is to himself.
That's right.
I laughed out loud. I agree with you that this is very melancholy, but...
It's also funny, but I think inside the melancholy, this is why comics are often the saddest people in the world. There's something funny about their preoccupations. And Zeke, going out into the backyard of his modernist family home, and finding this praying mantis whose head can turn like a human being's. I mean, he becomes transfixed. It's an extraordinary creature to him.
And the first time we see the world, it's full of extraordinary creatures, and Zeke has managed to protect that aspect of himself that's constantly surprised. You know, I'm going to miss this character. I have 50 pages left to the book, and I left them intentionally because I didn't want to leave him. He's a marvelous invention.
Thank you.
And
thank
what's you. Marvelous about him are his inventions.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really a very special case. I don't know how quite you invented the prospect of writing a novel of someone who finds everything surprising and knows so little about himself that he keeps being surprised. He keeps wanting love, but he doesn't have the gift for it, really. He meets women who are attracted to his strange lovelessness. They want to take him in hand.
Right.
And give him the experience of being loved.
One of the sections is when he's trying things out. He tries out being different kind of men. He tries out being a man who goes into a bar and says he's a psychiatrist and this is his character, he's an analysand and so on. He sees that he's attracting this woman and he feels so dishonest he has to leave. You know, he's trying out these different roles. And again, that's about what is the image that Zeke wants. He's so conscious of the superficiality of an image. And of course, that is what we fall in love with. We fall in love with an image. You may not, after 6 months, actually love the person whose image you fell in love with. And so he's so conscious of that. He feels dishonest in whatever form he puts himself.
And what gives such a character his characteristic voice? Because this is all first-person narration. And yet, although he presents us with literally hundreds of ideas, we don't get to know him better on account of them. They're obstacles. They're walls between him and what he might know about himself if he were not so infernally imaginative.
The hardest thing, of course, is creating a voice. And that's how you develop, from my point of view, I develop a character from the voice. And I wanted him to be serious and funny. I wanted him to take himself seriously and not to take himself seriously. And I don't know how, you're telling me I achieved it. I'm really happy to hear that from you, Michael. You know my work so well. I wanted him to be only himself. When teaching writing, you say to a student, you know, writing teachers use the term specificity. And to make a character someone who could only be this character, who could say only the things he says. For instance, toward the end of the book, you know, you begin to see him say some things to his analyst, and his analysts speak to him. And the analyst, in a way, I think, functions for the reader as a kind of help to get to know him a little bit better. She's trying, his analyst is trying to get him to admit to things or to see things that we as readers might know that he's not seeing or he doesn't want to see, particularly when he, and I'm not going to explain this, when he falls in love with an image, which does happen. So he's put through many trials, you know, and yeah, I think he does become more likable, but it's true. How knowable is he? But, you know, I've been living with the same man for many years, and I often look at him and I say to him, I don't think I know you at all.
I want to just tell my listeners that Men and Apparitions by my guest, Lynn Tillman, which is published by the press Soft Skull, kept me alert and dancing and pleasantly surprised. You know, Lynn Tillman is a frequent guest on Bookworm, but I think this is my favorite book, Men and Apparitions, by my guest Lynn Tillman.
Thank you
for joining me.
Thank you, Michael.
It's been a pleasure. You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. Or download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer, Michelle Escobar. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, Sean Sullivan. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she's a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she's a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Juno Daz is our guest.